president is on the verge of canceling at least $10,000 in student debt. Joseph Zeballos joins us now, senior economics reporter on the Congress beat and businessinsider.com. Hey, Joseph, you're on WGN. What's the latest on this?
Hey, John, thanks for having me on. And you pretty much summarized it pretty well so far. The Biden administration is edging closer to canceling $10,000 in student debt per borrower. The timeline is still a little uncertain, but it's been reported that individuals earning below $150,000 will qualify. That'd be $300,000 for couples, and it'd be a pretty sweeping set for a country that hasn't forgiven student debt at this scale.
I've heard that it would be for those who went to public schools and not private schools. So if you went to Illinois State, you would get the forgiveness. But if you went to Milliken or Bradley, you would not. Do you understand that to be the case? Are they still thinking along those lines?
That seems to be likelier, but there's a lot of details that have not been settled, including that. You know, I've talked to a few Democrats who are still kind of uncertain whether graduate loans would fall under the parameters of the program. And, Biden himself has said he's said in the past he's skeptical of forgiving loans to people who went to private schools as well. So it's still a little unclear what type of loans would be forgiven and, you know, whether that's public or private. And the administration is still, working out those details at the moment.
I'll just say this, by the way, debt is debt. Now, my son has a loan out and he went to Loyola, which is not a public school, but debt is debt. So I'm not exactly sure why you are penalizing the people who went to a private college than those who went to a public college. Of course, plenty of us don't understand why we're doing this anyway. If you have the means to pay, maybe you should be paying. I mean, look at those thresholds, $150,000. Wow, that sounds kind of high.
Right. Under the reported parameters, a vast majority of borrowers would qualify. I think it's a number is like 97%. So you're talking basically everybody. I think the administration wants to ensure that the most people are able to qualify to get some student debt forgiven. And that's also important to think about as well, that, you know, progressives have been pushing the Biden administration to, you know, do universal cancellation, $50,000 instead of 10. The administration is clearly not leaning in that direction. They're hewing a little bit closer to their campaign promise of $10,000 in debt forgiveness per borrower. But that's definitely something that, you know, even some centrist Democrats are uneasy about. You know, the idea that people who have graduated college, maybe in well-paying jobs, are going to be qualifying for debt forgiveness, especially in a midterm year. That's opened them up to Republican attacks. So this is a program that would benefit, you know, affluent professionals and people who, well-off people who tend to vote Democratic.
What's the timeline on this then? I mean, the cynic in all of us would say, well, they're going to wait until they get closer to the election. Do you think that's what's going to happen?
That seems to be the case at the moment. So I would expect that there would be a decision before the resumption of student loan repayments on August 31st. So we'll probably see a decision by the end of summer, but it would also probably help the administration to get this up and running as soon as possible because, you know, debt forgiveness by income, targeting this program based on people's income, that's going to take time to get up and running. There's a lot of bureaucratic hurdles that stand in the way to this being a clean program. So the closer they announce it to the midterms, the real risk they run of relief not really getting out the door to students before November midterms.
Yeah, how do you ascertain people's income? I guess you go to the IRS and say how much did they report, but I can imagine there's going to be all kinds of speed bumps along that way. So, yeah, I suppose it's going to be complicated. Joseph Zeballos reports on Congress, and in this case, a little bit about the possibility of student debt forgiveness for businessinsider.com. Joseph, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET, at CNET.com, and there's lots of things to talk about with our friends at CNET, including Netflix's new way to post the best shows list. Hey, Bree, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
So what's the number one show at Netflix?
Well, it's widely expected to become the new season of Stranger Things. You know, not that we weren't expecting this to get crazy good numbers in the first place, but Netflix recently made some changes to the way that it counts viewing hours, and this will definitely give shows like that a big boost.
What's the difference now? How are they rating or, you know, announcing this differently than they have in the past?
Well, because Stranger Things is dropping in two sections, Netflix will count the first section separately from the second section and then roll those numbers together. So shows that do drop into two volumes, so to speak, will definitely get an advantage when it comes to the new way of counting.
Do you have the list? Like, what else is, like, famously successful for Netflix?
Well, shows like Ozark have been hugely popular. You also have Bridgerton, which is wildly different from Ozark, but also popular. And, you know, things like The Squid Game, which did bonkers numbers all over the world.
And there's going to be a part two for Squid Game. Do you know what the release date is on that? That hasn't dropped already, has it?
No, that's way up in the air right now. But yeah, they've definitely greenlighted a second season for that. I mean, pretty much everyone all over the world at least watched that a little bit.
I wonder if Netflix or any of these sites that drop things all at once rather than issuing them periodically, like every Sunday night. I wonder if they're going to start to rethink that strategy. It's always been great for those of us who love the shows and want to just plow through them, but it would seem to me like they would be better off if they strung us along, kept us subscribing to the platforms. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, definitely if Netflix starts looking at, you know, there's been rumors and thought that they might be doing a cheaper tier of service that includes ads. And when you have ads, you have to attract advertisers. Showing big numbers is a way to get those big advertising dollars. So we'll see. I mean, I would bet that you probably will see more two-volume shows, if nothing else.
Does it matter that Sheryl Sandberg is stepping down from Meta?
I think it's more symbolic than anything. She was such a big part of the early days of what was Facebook. It's been a long career, especially when you're looking at the tech industry. And her book Lean In was definitely something that grabbed a lot of attention at the time.
Talk to me just briefly about NFTs and OpenSea. I think we're all kind of fascinated by what non-fungible tokens are, but what's the news on that front?
You know, it's really interesting. The Department of Justice has actually charged a former product manager at OpenSea, which is the largest marketplace out there for NFTs, or what we call non-fungible tokens. These are those, you know, weird little digital pieces of art that are becoming collectible and resellable. And they're charging them with insider trading, you know, treating it like an asset. And this is the first for the DOJ. Penalties actually are pretty strict when it comes to these kinds of crimes. You know, you're looking at 20 years in prison.
And finally, we each week check in on what's the latest with Elon Musk. And actually, he continues to find himself in the news, doesn't he?
You know, it's just nonstop with Elon Musk. The FCC sent a letter asking why he didn't disclose his 9.2% stake in Twitter when he was supposed to. He filed the paperwork for that later than, you know, he was supposed to per regulations. And Musk is also deciding, despite COVID, to crack down on remote work at Tesla and SpaceX. He's put out memos saying that anyone who wishes to do remote work must be in the office for a, quote, minimum of 40 hours per week. That's a lot for a lot of people out there.
And he said, and if you don't like that, then you can go work somewhere else. I mean, he seemed to be resolute about that. No hybrid, no 3 days a week. He said, and he says, and I mean minimum 40 hours in the office if you want to continue to work at Tesla.
Right. Right. And that gives you the impression that people at Tesla are working way more than 40 hours as it is. You know, we'll see how this affects their recruiting and workforce morale, things like that. Opinions tend to have a way of leaking out of those kinds of places.
See, you know, it's funny because I was suggesting to my colleagues here earlier today that I wonder if at some point he's going to get too many balls in the air and he's going to start to drop them. The car's been popular. The satellite rocket program seemed to be successful. You know, he does seem to have a pretty deft touch. But I wonder, he's got a restaurant idea out there, too. You wonder if at some point he's going to start to make mistakes or people are going to rebel against him.
Right. I mean, all of us are constantly in danger of spreading ourselves too thin. And he does have his fingers in lots of different pots. But, you know, we'll see. And we'll see if the Twitter deal actually goes through. You know, that's technically on hold right now as he looks more into, you know, the people and the bots allegedly that are posting on Twitter. So that may become not a reality as originally expected.
What do you think about that? What's going to happen with Twitter? Is he going to end up consummating that deal or not?
You know, with someone like Musk, it's really hard to prophesize when it comes to things like that. He is not a predictable person. He might be looking for a way out, but, you know, he's got a lot of money to throw around, too. So it's one of those things where we're just going to have to wait and see. And in the meantime, I'm sure lots of people will be sharing their opinions about that on Twitter.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. Hey, Bree, nice to talk to you. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
WGN Radio, Ted Rossman is a senior industry, analyst at Bankrate. And Ted, we've all been talking about how many more people are getting married this year because they had to delay their weddings the last couple, but that's not the only sort of celebratory spending that people are engaged in, is it?
That's right. Yeah, we're thankful for all this progress on the COVID front because about two-thirds of U.S. adults are attending some sort of celebratory gathering this year. Birthday parties were actually number one. Weddings were second, actually tied with graduations. You know, we've also got things like religious ceremonies, baby showers. It's good to be back together. The problem is that all this stuff is expensive, especially with inflation running so hot.
Well, I guess that's a problem for those people, but it's good for the vendors, right? This, it would seem to me like it would be net neutral. It's costing me more money, but somebody's making more money, right?
That's true. I mean, it's probably a good time to be a florist or DJ or catering hall. I mean, I know they went through some tough times the past few years, but right now things are absolutely booming. On the guest side of things, though, we found a few years ago the average cost to attend the wedding of a close friend or family member was over $600 when you include everything, the travel, attire, gifts, things like that. I have to think it's considerably higher now, and it is weighing on people. We found in our recent survey that about 40 million people have felt pressure to overspend on an event this year.
$600 just to attend, not to be in the wedding?
That's right. Yeah, this is just to attend. And you're right, being in the wedding is even more. A trend that I've seen is that more and more people are doing destination weddings. Maybe there's also a destination bachelor or bachelorette party. If you're in your 20s or 30s, I mean, there's a good chance you're invited to 5, 8, 10 weddings this year. I mean, that's what I've been hearing from a lot of people. And each of these may have other events attached to it. So, again, good problem to have. But a lot of people are saying, oh, my gosh, how am I going to afford all this?
Yeah, talk to me about that. Do people not go? Do they feel guilty about it? Is that a sore spot between the couples and their friends?
Yeah, I think all the above. It's really interesting that we found that actually fewer people are attending events this year versus last. So it's been a slight decline from 65% to 61%. But in the context of COVID, it's just shocking. I mean, you would think that this would be the year that everybody's going and everybody's doing this. So our hypothesis is that inflation has led some people to say, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't make it, which I guess is okay. I mean, you'd like to go. But maybe there are some creative ways you can make it work, like using credit card rewards or airline miles or hotel points to fund that trip, or cash back that can go for these expenses, or gift cards. Maybe there's also some things you can do to go in on a group gift or share accommodations with friends. Or, you know, I'm just trying to think of creative things, renting your dress or suit instead of buying new, or repurposing stuff you already have. Because a lot of people are having major sticker shock when these invites arrive.
How are people financing it, the weddings themselves? Are they coming up with cash, or are they putting it on credit cards?
That's the other side of this. Yeah, the people that are actually putting on these events, I mean, we're talking staggering costs. I mean, often well into the tens of thousands of dollars. Putting it on a credit card is very risky if you're going to carry a balance, because the average interest rate is approaching 17% and pushing higher along with the Fed's moves. Now, if you can pay in full for some of these expenses, like you put the flowers or the catering or something on your credit card and pay it off right away and get the points and miles, I mean, that could actually fund a really nice honeymoon. But this is definitely kind of a half and half sort of thing. Half of cardholders pay in full and half don't.
Well, I suppose the other half, those who can't pay it off in cash and now they are going to rack up a high interest charge, and they must be telling themselves, well, at least I get the points. Does that make any sense?
Mathematically, no, because the average interest rate is so much higher. And we're talking almost 17% versus a good cash back rate would be something like 2 or 3%, you know, maybe up to 5 or 6 in certain categories. It's a similar story with airline miles. Now, the sign-up bonuses are nice. I mean, I think the way to do this is to be very selective about only putting charges on that you can afford to pay off in full. But even if you do just a portion of the wedding charges and you spend that few thousand dollars in the first few months on the new card and you get all the bonus points, I mean, that's a way it can work for you. But I've also been hearing about people scaling back some of these events. Maybe you have a smaller guest list, or you do it on a smaller scale. Maybe it's more of a backyard kind of affair as opposed to really doing it up. Because inflation is really, I think, increasingly weighing on people in all facets of their lives.
I suppose there's a population out there, and I completely understand this, that are like, I've waited 2 years. I didn't wait two and a half years to do it in mom's backyard. I want a ballroom. I want a band. I want a bar. I want the whole package. That's what we waited for. And then you run into almost supply chain issues, don't you? You've got to find venues and all of those vendors.
It's super busy. Yeah, a typical year over the past 20 years or so has had about 2 million weddings, sometimes a little more, 2.1, 2.2 million. Now we're talking 2.5. And I actually think that might be hiding a little bit, because there are some people that officially got married during the pandemic, but just now are they doing the big reception.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I actually think demand for those sort of venues has to be through the roof. And there's other events too. You know, we touched upon some of them, like, you know, maybe it's a graduation or a bar or bat mitzvah or a retirement party. I mean, there's a lot of reasons people are gathering. And I think that there is very much a supply shock to a lot of these providers.
Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you, Ted. Thanks for your help today.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
I have a 30-year-old son, and he and his friends, when they turn 30, that's a number with a zero, so they tend to celebrate it. It seems to me, though, that the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings spend a lot more energy celebrating their birthdays than people my age. I mean, it's a birthday week, and they just don't have a cake. Oh, my gosh, it is a celebration. It's 1243. Happy for you. If you got the money, spend it, kids. It's 1243 on WGN. More WGN Radio Business News with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new report says Peoples Gas has collected more than $600 million in surcharges over a six-year period without the regulatory reviews required by law. Cranes reports those reviews are supposed to be done by the Illinois Commerce Commission, but the agency is 6 years behind in its work. Annual reviews by the ICC are supposed to be done to make sure Peoples imposes surcharges for legitimate infrastructure investments. Since 2013, Peoples Gas has spent more than $1.6 billion on its system modernization program, and the report says none of it has been reviewed. A An ICC spokesperson blames COVID-19 for the delayed review. The commission has hired an outside auditor to help, but it's unclear how long it'll take to catch up. Private equity firm Valor Equity Partners is moving its headquarters out of 875 North Michigan, formerly known as the John Hancock Center. According to Cranes, the firm is moving to the Fulton Market District, where it signed a deal for the top floor at 320 North Sangamon. Valor has been an early investor in several top Chicago startups, including Fuda, Cameo, and Talk. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And the business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Today's business of food is about marshmallows. You know, for the past 5 years, Chicago has been home to the world's first. Well, I'll let her tell you.
XO Marshmallow is the premier gourmet marshmallow company in the world with the world's first all-marshmallow cafe.
That is Lindsay Shanks, co-founder and co-CEO of XO Marshmallow Cafe. It's been tucked away in Rogers Park, but Saturday is the grand opening of a much larger cafe in Lincoln Park.
It's super colorful, really fun, very super graphic and retro style. People can order our various marshmallow flavors, s'mores, hot chocolates, frozen lemonades, our marshmallow fluff. Basically anything related to marshmallows, we do it.
S'mores. I like s'mores. Do customers get to make their own? Is there a fire pit?
We make the s'mores. So we use a handheld torch. And while we love our customers, we like to keep the fire in our hands.
If you're thinking marshmallows and you're thinking of the plastic bag full of cylindrical shaped puffs.
Ours are not that at all. Our marshmallows are cube shaped and they're gourmet. We don't use any added preservatives. And so our marshmallows are a lot fluffier, a lot softer, a lot spongier, and definitely a lot more flavorful.
A lot to choose from on the menu.
Yeah. So our biggest selling marshmallow flavor is our Funfetti, which tastes like a birthday cake.
Oh, I see bourbon marshmallows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're made with actual bourbon. The alcohol does get cooked out in the process, but they do taste exactly like bourbon. Personally, love them toasted.
XO Marshmallow Cafe in Wonderland and its new location, Clark near Diversey. It's also moving its production plant to a much larger facility in Skokie. Who knew marshmallows would support a cafe? And well, Lindsay Shanks and her partner Kat Connor did. Good for them. Anything else you wanted to say, Lindsay?
Just make sure to follow us on Instagram and our TikTok. We love showing people behind the scenes.
From the farm to your belly, today is National Rotisserie Chicken Day. And for dessert, it's National Rocky Road Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
We were talking about celebratory spending. It's up. Amy Guth, let's start there then. You were talking about weddings in Las Vegas, right?
You know, I thought this is a really interesting story from the Las Vegas Review Journal. So anybody who's listening who has their heart set on an Elvis-themed wedding in Vegas, you might need to reconsider that. So the company that holds the licensing for Elvis-related stuff, it's called Authentic Brands Group. So any kind of Elvis merchandise, they also have a couple of other brands like Marilyn Monroe-themed stuff that you might find anywhere. They have sent a cease and desist letter to several Las Vegas chapels. They dated it May 19th, and by now, most of these chapels should start to be in compliance, saying they can't use Elvis weddings anymore. You can no longer have the Elvis wedding. There is an entertainment loophole. So if you are an Elvis impersonator, you could still do a show in Vegas, but you cannot do the Elvis wedding anymore. So we might see some other, I don't know, other characters popping up for theme weddings in Vegas.
I'm surprised they haven't done this before. I mean, those things have been there forever. It's
forever.
It's a popular thing. I wonder what suddenly motivated them to sort of exercise that right if it's theirs.
Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly the county clerk who issues all those marriage licenses said to the Vegas paper that it couldn't come at a worse time, because here are a lot of chapels that have not a lot of people eloped during the pandemic. So a lot of chapels that are kind of just getting their groove back and just starting to book up for the summer and, you know, suddenly having to shift and do other plans. So we'll see what the new themes are for if you know, people want to go elope to Vegas, who might be their officiant.
Ford is adding some jobs in the Midwest, huh?
Certainly, quite a few jobs. So Ford is going to add 6,200 jobs in Ohio, Michigan, and Missouri. Associated Press did some reporting on this a little bit earlier. These are all factory jobs. They're investing $3.7 billion in the three states between now and 2026. So that's still a pretty tight timeline where they're really kind of doubling down on their electric fleet. But they are still going to do some internal combustion engine builds as well. So in near Cleveland, outside of Cleveland in Avon Lake, Ohio, that's about 1,800 jobs. Near Kansas City, about 1,100, about 2,000 jobs in Michigan at the Ford plant there. And a lot of this has to do with the F-150 electric pickup. So the F-150 has always been one of the top-selling trucks in the U.S., but the electric pickup, they had to kind of cut off pre-orders at some point because they said they were met with unexpected demand. So they're taking a minute to switch all those orders to deliveries and then investing in that infrastructure too. So good news for, you know, Midwest automotive jobs, certainly.
What's the United Airlines news today?
Yeah, another big investment there. And of course, we keep an eye on it on United because they're based here in Chicago. But they have really been talking a lot about pilot training. A lot of airlines have because a lot of pilots are set to retire in the next several years. We also saw a lot of staffing changes during the pandemic, some fleet changes, a lot of carriers still not totally flying at capacity. So United is aiming to add about 2,000 pilots this year. That's a pretty ambitious number. About 5,000 to 6,000 get trained per year. So that's a big swath of those new graduates. So United is planning a $100 million pilot training center expansion as part of this hiring spree. That center is going to be in Denver. But of course, as I said, United is based here. But mostly they're going to have more simulators to be able to train pilots on Boeing 737 MAX planes and the Airbus planes that they have. So part of this is supporting the very big order of planes that from both makers that United put in. But also that's a really interesting tool to try to get that big number of new pilots hired.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This headline made me laugh. Twitter is building a tool for keyword alerts in case you need more Twitter notifications.
Right, because that's what we all need. Yeah. Basically, this is kind of like a Google alert. You know, you can set a Google alert for your name or your business or maybe the product you sell. And now you can do that on Twitter. You can do the opposite already. So if there's something you don't want to hear, a name or a phrase or something or a swear word, say you don't want to appear in your Twitter timeline, you can mute that word. You can mute a particular account also. But now this is kind of the opposite. So I think the implication for small business owners is really interesting. So, you know, say you make a particular kind of widget, you could set a search term for anyone who's talking about that kind of product so that you or your social media manager could hop right in and say, hey, that's exactly what we make. You know, that you and I could follow the phrase like Chicago radio or something like that. So that anytime someone's talking about something happening in Chicago radio, we would be able to see that really quickly, even if that's somebody we don't necessarily already follow. So yeah. I think it could be a really interesting discovery tool. But yeah, maybe leave the notifications off for that one so it doesn't blow up our phones.
I'm just looking at the tool bar on my Twitter account. I didn't know I had those options already, the ones that you said are already in existence.
Yeah.
So what do you know? Learn something here. All right. Thanks for the help, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.